All right, on this episode of Bouts Talkin' Bouts, excited to be talking to an individual set to headline Samurai MMA 5, which transpires on March the 11th. We've got that super lightweight championship on the line, and we have Robert Saris getting out there, and Jesse Ronson clashing with him and vying for that MMA championship, and excited to have Jesse on the show to chat a bit about that. How's your day going, man?
It's going good. So unless you know something that I don't, as far as I know, Alex Morgan's the headline of Samurai. I've been asked why I'm not the headline. Alex Morgan's the big star down there now, and it's in his backyard, so he's the headline. Despite everybody telling me that they're going to watch me, or the fight to see is my fight, he's the headline. So appreciate you saying that, mate, but it's him.
I was going to say, I guess that's the aggregator I'm going off of. I was going off of Tapology there. Maybe they just presumed you'd be the main event because of your, cachet and everything like that. It seems like you're being a bit tongue-in-cheek. Do you feel any type of way about not being the main event? Do you think you're, like, the people's main event, almost?
So from everybody that I've talked to, they're pretty much saying that this is the main event. But they're giving the main event slot to the hometown guy, which I don't care. I get paid the same whether I'm the main event or the first fight up. Doesn't matter to me. So my pay is not increasing or decreasing. And, I have absolutely, no cares about that whatsoever.
Yeah, it's just curious because it's like on all the aggregators I'm looking on, it's like positioned Alex Morgan in the co-main. And yeah, I guess everyone's having the same presumption there and everything. But, I mean, this is a very intriguing fight because as much as it's like, a new opportunity and the next fight and everything, it definitely has certain hallmarks to like when we kind of first started doing interviews, like the TKO days, like, two division champion and everything. Like, does it kind of feel like that sort of confluence? Like, does it feel like something new, but simultaneously something familiar as well?
Yeah, this card has a lot of TKO vibes. There's a lot of TKO fighters on it. And, when you think of Quebec, you think of Montreal and MMA, you think TKO. Even though it's Samurai, completely different organization, different people, whatever, it's got the same vibes. And yeah, I'm just very excited for the opportunity that they messaged me, and like it's an immediate title shot. I'm glad I'm coming off a win and not just coming out of the UFC and getting gifted a title shot off a loss like Jonathan Mounier, the little punk ass bitch who's been ducking me forever. I don't think he's fighting anymore, but I remember when he got cut from the UFC, he instantly got a title shot in the TKO. So I'm glad I got cut from the UFC. I got a win. I got my title fight in Quebec, so I get to go back there and show the Quebecois that I'm still the fucking man out there. And I can't wait another week.
Yeah, and it seemed like something that was like very much on your radar even the last time we were talking. Like, that seemed to be something you indicated as important. Like, that would be a cool opportunity you'd like to kind of become a part of. So I guess when did like that bout offer initially come your way?
That offer to fight Robert Saris actually came before I got the offer to fight, Nordin Azri for BTC. They're like, hey, are you interested in fighting in March? I'm like, well, March is a long ways away. I'm going to try and look for something in December. Cause they had like a slew of three shows back to back, like BTC, Unified. And I think another one too, but it was like, I think I can get on one of those. Just, I wasn't really hurt other than my pride after the Joaquin Silva fight, so I wanted to get back in there and get a win, like end the year on a win and then start 2023 in that winning column. So I found the fight like a day after. It's like when it rains it pours, so I got offered the Robert Saris fight. I was like, yeah, okay, if I can find something else, let me do that, but I'll let you know. And the Nordin Azri fight fell in my lap, beat him, and then as soon as that was done, Daniel Lafon from Samurai MMA goes, okay, so you got that win. Are we doing March 11th? I'm like, yeah, let's fucking go. And sure enough, like, right after I finished, securing that deal, a guy from BFL goes, what about Dejan or Dejan Kajic in July? And I was like, holy fuck, well, can you let me fight March 11th first? Because I was like, not that I plan on losing, but if I lose one more MMA fight, I'm done MMA. I'm not done fighting. I'll do kickboxing, bare knuckle, whatever. But, like, 13 losses in MMA is enough for me. I'm like, aren't you going to wait? They're like, oh, well, we'd like to sign something right now. And I'm like, well, to be honest with you, if I win, when I win, I want to fight, I want to try banging these things out. So fight offers just keep coming, but it's just the time is so, like, even if it's July 13th, that's, you know, 4 or 5 months. What is it? April, May, June, July. So 4 months. I would like to fight, you know, in May and then do the July fight. So I want to stay busy.
Yeah, for sure. And you touched on that last one there. Like, it just seemed like a good general, like, couple weeks, few weeks for you. Like, you ended off the year on a win and everything like that. And then you had, like, a birthday through the holidays and all that. You locked in this title fight. So it would seem like a, you know, great time, like a time to, you know, be excited about, you know, future prospects and everything.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I win March 11th. I would love to fight at the end of April or the beginning of May. And then I would love to fight that Dejan Kajic guy in July. That's all provided that I don't get signed by Bellator or ONE FC. Like, if those guys don't want me or a bigger promotion doesn't want me, I want to stay as busy as I can with these local shows because, like, the paydays are okay, but they're not the best. And it's like I'm going to be fighting check to check pretty much. So I got to stay busy with these local shows. And so I can't really lock myself in for July after this one. I need something in between. And it's like, even still, I'm as soon as a big show calls, like ONE FC or Bellator or anywhere that offers, you know, decent money, I'm going. Like, I'm not doing it. So it's like, as my, like, there's a lot of, I'm exciting a lot of people by saying I'd fight these guys. But I was like, to be honest, if, like, these fights might not happen if I get the call. So, you know, slow down.
And I guess to that point, has there been any dialogue with, like, either Bellator or ONE? Like, you're kind of outlining those as places you'd like to kind of compete in. Is that, like, a manifest into reality kind of thing? Is there some, like, even preliminary or tentative dialogue at all?
That would be up to my manager. But after I beat Norden in December, he goes, okay, cool. We're going to have to get another one. He's like, go out there and get another big win. He's like, that'll make it a lot easier for us to get signed to somewhere else. And I always say, like, I'm, you know, I've done the UFC 6 times. It is what it is, but, like, I'm not going to sign back to the UFC for an entry-level contract. You know what I mean? I see other people fighting in Bellator that never made it to the UFC or only had one or two fights in the UFC, went 0-1, 0-2, or whatever, and they're making, you know, 3 times as much as an entry-level UFC contract. So it's like, I want to go somewhere where I'm going to get paid, or, you know, somewhere that's going to keep me busy. Like, ONE FC, I don't know what the pay scale is there, but they have shows every week. And it's like, their athletes can do kickboxing, they can do MMA, they can do grappling, whatever it is. And they don't do the weight cutting thing. So it's like, I would have to fight at 185, like my walk around weight. I'd have to fight at 185, which is perfect because that means I can stay healthy. I can eat the whole time, not worried about injuries. So it's like, that really excites me about ONE FC is the no weight cutting thing. But then Bellator also excites me to get those big paydays, but how often would I fight there? But yeah, it's all, my manager said we need another big win and we can start talking to those guys. So March 11th, it's all on that one. So I've been training my fucking ass off, you know, super hard. Like, I wish I had the guys that I have for training now that I did, you know, way back in the UFC or like when I was training for the, like in the UFC, because it's like the training is just so good and I got to get these wins. Like, I know Sarah's a 7-3 dangerous, you know, power, but it's like, man, I'm putting a lot of work in and people are like, man, you're working real hard for Robert Sarah's. I'm like, I can't afford to let this guy fucking even have a glimpse of looking good against me.
And when you talk about like wanting to have like those training partners and everything you have now, like you wish you'd had them like years back, even like, I guess I presume you're talking about some of the usual, you know, cast of characters, like some of the Aegis MMA guys, Adrenaline MMA, Niagara Top Team, etc.
Well, yeah, it's everybody, their skill level now, like, everybody's just so good now. Like Mike Malott's now back from California. He's a phenomenal body. Ergus Sagat has always been a dangerous guy, but now he's like, he's a dangerous jiu-jitsu dude. He's dangerous wrestling. He understands MMA. Like, he's just a good guy to have around. You know, we have so many high-level guys, like even Clay Pye, Olympic-level wrestler. Like, he wasn't around a few years ago. He's around now. It's like, we have high-level guys in every area, whether it's wrestling, jiu-jitsu, boxing, kickboxing, striking, or even MMA. Like, we just have all the high-level guys that we, if we need to get a hold of them, we can and train with them. It's like, we didn't have that a few years ago. It's like, it's now coming around. It's like, I wish I was 7 years younger and I could make another real run at things, because it's like, we have everybody and within a 2 or 2.5 hour radius that we can train with. And it's just fucking phenomenal now.
Yeah, I love to hear that. And you talk about just like the intensity of your training and how everyone is really, I guess, noticing that and you just wanting to have the most, I guess, comprehensive performance you can. I guess to that point, like, how much do you, I guess, curate the sparring partner dynamic to, like, as closely resemble, like, the body type and, I guess, stylistic attributes of Robert Saras? Like, is that, like, a particular, like, part of this camp that you're really focusing on as well, or not so much?
No, I know his body type, I know his build, I've seen his style, and it's like, I can, like, if I limit myself to people his height and get them to do what he's good at, it's like, it takes away from my partner's strengths. But it's like, now I'm finding, like, back, like, a couple years ago, you know, I was winning rounds easily. Now I'm having times where it's like, holy fuck, like, this guy just kicked my fucking ass. I gotta get to work. And, like, that's how you level up, is by taking the beatings, taking the licks, coming back, and then you spar that guy next week, and, you know, you're doing better, or you win that round. It's like, it's like, that's the type of stuff that I need. So it's like, I don't go up to guys and, like, hey, what do you need? Who are you fighting? I'm, oh, I'm fighting Robert Saras. And it's like, oh, okay, what's he good at? I'm like, don't worry about what he's good at. I need you to do you, because when you do you, you give me a harder round than when you try to imitate Robert Saras. Like, I know what Robert Saras does. He swings heavy counters. He's down to get in firefights. He loves his guillotines. You know, he loves the pressure, but he's also smart. He'll look for openings. I'm like, don't worry about that. Like, I know what he does. I need you to give me the hardest fucking round that I could possibly have. You know, so I'm like, just do your best shit. And, like, it's easy for me with my experience and being in the game, like, to change. Like, all right, so even though you just did stuff that Robert Saras will never do, I can still equate that to what, when I get in there with Robert Saras, because I know what I need to look out for. And it's like, if he wants to completely change his style up to throw me off, then I know he's not going to be as good as the real Robert Saras, because now he's even doing stuff that he's just starting to learn. So it's better for me anyways.
Yeah, and I guess it would give you the most comprehensive read possible, just to, I guess, be adaptable to any kind of opponent. I mean, you obviously have that, you know, wealth of experience that you've built throughout the career altogether, but yeah, maybe just to the point of not, like, exactly trying to replicate someone's attributes, like, maybe it's better to just get that, like, wider range of, you know, combative looks, I guess. And like you said, it'd be more authentic from, like, how the people are expressing themselves and fighting too.
Yeah, so when I was in the UFC, like, when I fought Rafa Garcia and Joaquin Silva, I had every practice was just training to replicate their moves, what they do. Training to replicate their moves, what they do. Everybody, okay, I need you shooting, throwing this to this. I need this to this. I need you doing this. Just doing exactly what they do. Then I went out there and I fought Rafa Garcia, and he was different. Like, he actually engaged on the ground. He actively did, like, striking differently. He engaged in different takedowns than what we saw in all his fights. I'm like, we watched, like, 10 of his fights, and he was completely different when he fought me. So I was like, wow, I just wasted 10 weeks training for Rafa Garcia from his last couple of fights, and I got a completely different Garcia. Same thing with Joaquin Silva. I've trained for Joaquin Silva, watched his moves, everything, like, all, like, his last 10 fights. He was the same guy, you know, blitzes out, does a lot of crazy stuff. I fought him. He was completely different. He was relaxed. He was patient. He switched his stance. He threw flying knees from switch stance, shit that he never did. I'm like, wow, I just wasted another 10 weeks training for a guy when the fight was over. I'm like, training for his specific moves, training for his strength and everything else. When I fought him, he was completely different. So it's like, you know what I'm doing now? I'm just going to have everybody do what they do. Like, I can understand what my opponent's good at, but the people that I'm training with, I'm like, just be you, man. I know how to fix, like, I know what we're training for this guy, but I just need you to be you to give me the hardest rounds possible, because my game plan's still the same. If it works on you and it works on a completely different guy, or if it works on you, Malat, it works on you, Ergus, it works on you, Romero, it works on you, Jeffries, it works on you, Clay, it works on you, Asenza, like, it's working on all these different styles. It's going to work on Robert Saras. I just know what I need to watch out for, because what he does best, right? So I'm no longer doing, like, that specific training stuff. It's just understanding what my opponent's strengths are and then doing me.
Yeah, and based on what you were saying before, it seems like you very much do, like, understand, like, your opponent's strengths out there. I guess I'm just curious on the thoughts on just, like, the overall, you know, quote-unquote resume, just seeing that they have, like, that localized samurai MMA experience, like a 3-fight winning streak with those being first-round finishes, and just also noticing you guys have, like, some similar, like, mutual opponents from the past as well, like Jeremy Capone and Dufort and everything like that. Like, what are your thoughts on, I guess, the quote-unquote resume of your opponent heading into this?
So he's 7-3 pro. I think he was 7-1 or 7-2 as an amateur. out of his 14 wins, I think 9 of them are by guillotine, and then a couple are by decision. He's got one by TKO. I'm not too sure, but he's due for a Capone fights for like 6 and 7 years ago. And, you know, a lot can change in 6 or 7 years. He comes back and he beats Patrick Connors. I can't remember what he beat him by. I think first round finish, I think submission. And then he had that firefight 11-second win versus Kevin Genereau, which, you know, is no surprise there. Kevin Genereau, he may be a fighter, but he's an idiot. He's probably the dumbest fighter I've ever seen. And then De Lorenzi, right, who was touted to be better than George St. Pierre 12 years ago or 10 years ago, but the guy hasn't fought in 9 or 10 years, so it's like, what do you expect? Your first fight back, you could see a little bit of hesitation in Robert Serres when he fought De Lorenzi, like, holy fuck, like, this guy's big. You know, he's got a lot more experience than me, even at higher levels. Like, you could tell he hesitated, but then when he clipped him, it was game over, like a dog on a bone. So he's 7-3. He stayed local, but the best guy he fought was De Lorenzi, and he put him away in, like, less than a minute. But that's because De Lorenzi, I think he got a little frustrated, and I think being out for 10 years, he just threw that loop and lazy kick that Robert Serres was able to counter on, which, you know, I won't make those mistakes. I got to stay ultra sharp with him because I know he has that power. And I know he's got that, you know, rabid dog on a bone. When somebody's hurt, he smells that blood and he's going for the finish.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate that analysis. I'm trying to, I guess, like, you know, figure out a way to phrase this too, because, I mean, he's a guy who, like you said, in that last fight had that sort of moment of, like, I guess realizing, like, the magnitude of the moment, like, oh, wow, this is, like, a bigger guy. This is, like, a highly touted individual. But the confidence kind of came to the forefront when he had, you know, some level of success with his striking. And maybe this is kind of in line with what we were talking about before, if not presuming what he's going to do in terms of, like, I guess the X's and O's of the martial arts. But do you almost kind of foresee something like that happening, maybe just with, you know, the depth of experience you have and him kind of feeling that weight of the moment? Like, do you kind of see something like that happening too, and maybe knowing how to navigate that and capitalize on that moment and everything?
100%. I 100%. He might be a little, I don't think he'll be starstruck or, you know, frozen in the moment, because he just did beat De Lorenzi. He's probably ultra confident. So he's got to remember that I'm a different kind of animal. So it's like the nervousness is going to be there, and he'll probably swing wild when he can. It's like, he's not afraid to commit. And that's an issue that a lot of fighters have, is like, oh, if I commit to this and I miss, I'm fucked. If I commit to this and he hits me with something, I'm fucked. Whereas Robert Serres doesn't care about that. And he just, like, he fights his fear. He uses it to his advantage. And that's why I saw it in the De Lorenzi fight, where he's like, he was a little backpedal, a little scared, but then he was just like, ah, fuck it, I don't care, I'm going for it. And it worked. You know, same with the Genereau fight. So it's like, he uses his fear. So it's like, we got to find a way around that, because he's not afraid to pull the trigger. He's not afraid to commit. He knows he's the underdog, so he's like, what does he have to lose? So he's a very dangerous guy, but like I said, with my level of experience and the ability to relax in there and control a situation, I can definitely take advantage of it, because I feel like I'm a better wrestler, a better striker, and a better jiu-jitsu guy. But this is MMA, 4 ounce gloves, anything can happen. You know, you don't put your hand back that half inch that he was there, you get hit somewhere, it's over. And it takes, like, a guy like Robert Serres, like I said, rabid guy, dog on a bone. That's all it takes. And so I can't afford to make those mistakes, so I got to be ultra smart, and I can exploit it on him. I feel like my experience and, you know, just being overall better, I can exploit the fresh young guy.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess just, like, a couple more questions I had for you here. Like I said, I do want to be, you know, mindful of your, you know, schedule and stuff as well. But I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't, you know, talk about this, because, like, in the last, like, couple chats, there's been a couple mentions of, like, if you lose one more time in MMA, it's like, oh, I'll not do that again. Like, maybe I'll go bare knuckle or kickboxing thereafter. Like, how much of that is something to, I mean, you're already tremendously motivated in general, but is there, like, a chip on your shoulder, like, additional kind of component that serves as well, or maybe not so much? Like, how are you, I guess, looking at it like that? Is there some competitive benefit attached to that as well, or are you not even thinking of it like that, I suppose?
Oh, yeah. The thing is, one more loss in MMA and I'm done. You know, it's just 13 losses is enough. That's too much. I don't want to be that guy that's, you know, 22 and 13, still fighting at 37. You know what I mean? It is what it is. I'm happy to walk away. I'm happy with my accomplishments that I've done in my MMA career, except for with the UFC. So, that being said, I don't want to lose. I can't lose because I have, in my mind, and like in the mind, everybody that knows me knows that I have so much more to offer and so much more to show. So it's like, I can't lose. I can't lose to Robert Thayers. I don't want to lose. I can't lose for a while because there's so much I want to show. So it's like, I can do that on the Bellator stage, the ONE FC stage. But it's like, if it does happen, it happens. I'm happy to walk away. Good for me. Pat on the back. But it's like, I'm training my ass off. I'm dieting. I'm doing everything I can to prevent that because I personally don't want to stop. I will, but I don't want to, and I can't. So it's like, it's given me that extra motivation, that extra fire lit under my ass to keep going and push harder and harder because it's like, I can't stop now because there's just so much more that everybody needs to see. So I need to keep winning. I need to get to another platform. I need to do more. I need to, you know, show everybody that I am this good and I can still keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do very much feel the same. Like, I feel like the skill set you have, like, you very much do have, you know, a lot more, you know, to offer and everything like that. And not saying it in a way that's antithetical to, you know, what I just said, but just like, since you've been mentioning BKFC, like, I feel like that's just like been a very intriguing thing. Like, I could see you adapting very well to that. Like, I'm kind of curious, like, if you were to like go down a path like that, like, what would it look like in, I guess, like a divisional kind of sense? Because I feel like you could probably like do 165 as you're preparing for, you know, that weight here, but maybe certain options at 175 if you were so inclined. Like, have you, I guess, even mapped out like a path in that kind of regard if you were to go that BKFC route? Or is it just like the curiosity of like, you know, trying another combat sport and seeing, I guess, how well you do in it kind of thing?
BKFC, I haven't really thought about it. I'd like to do it. That would be, for me, that'd be how much, like, how much money can I make from these guys? And I would definitely do probably 175. Because, you know, I walk around 185, 190, and if I'm just standing in front of a guy going toe-to-toe, bare knuckle, I want all my strength and all my power. I don't want to start taking away percentages by dieting too much or focusing on making weight. So 175 would be best. I know how strong I am at that weight class. And I see all these other guys, you know, that fought at 35 or 45, they're fighting at 75. Like Mike Richmond, for example, fought as low as 135. He just fought for the 185 title.
Yeah.
It's like, when you're throwing just hands, I would definitely be doing 175 for the first couple, see how that went, and then maybe discuss the 165. But yeah, the bare knuckle would be 175. Just like ONE FC, I would do 185 because they have the no weight cutting. At Bellator, if I went there, I would do 170. Did I map out opponents or whatever else? No. But I don't like doing that unless I actually have the contract in hand. Because there's no point in, you can dream about it all you want, but if it's not able to, like, if it's not coming true, then what's, you're just wasting your time daydreaming, right? It's nice to want, but it's better to have.
Yeah, no, well said, man. Just a very exciting time, like a lot of, you know, great options. And I mean, chief among them, this next one, I just, you know, love the classic, like, you know, throwback vibes of like Ontario versus Quebec and, you know, the whole, like, you know, UCC, TKO vibes from back in the day. I mean, as much as we've talked about, like, new people, new thing here, but has certain cool, like, historical kind of connotations as well. But you've been good with your time, and I appreciate you coming on the show before this one. I'm just curious, though, just in being mindful of your time, is there maybe anything you'd like to kind of add as, like, a parting final thought as we're wrapping up, Jesse?
Nah, man, like, you're gonna see, I literally feel the best, I look the best, I'm the strongest I've ever been, and the best I've trained in years. Since I probably made this shift over to Adrenaline Team Tompkins way back in 2009, 2010, when they had, you know, four guys in the UFC and every Dick, Tom, and Harry was going there to spar, like, it's been that long since I've had this level of good training and since I've pushed myself this hard. So, you know, I just look forward to giving the best me, and you guys are going to see it on the 10th at the weigh-ins. You're going to see it on the 11th in the fight.
Yeah, very much looking forward to that fight. I was excited for it before talking to you, but I mean, compounded more so just after, you know, hearing everything you're putting into this and everything. And yeah, if anyone's in that immediate area, definitely Samurai MMA 5 seeming like a great card to check out. So yeah, to reiterate, thanks for coming on, man. I always do appreciate that, and looking forward to checking out the fight. But until then, you have a good rest of your day, Jesse.
All right, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.